All right, hello and welcome to the Mystic Mind Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and I'm going to smoke a bowl. Myself there, you know, it's like the story in my head that's perpetually being retold sort of gets, I don't know, short-circuited by things like cannabis and psychedelics or alcohol. But I guess what I want to talk about today is really that I don't really know anything, and why listen to me other than for entertainment, or you're just connecting with a part of yourself that you're sort of experiencing through me, and that's fine too. I suppose what I've come head to head with is the need to do the work. It's really fun to theorize and push things around, ideas, philosophies, but really, I mean, those are just still thoughts and ideas obscuring a sort of more objective experience of reality. And I'm not saying I know what that is or what that looks like, but, you know, I am an advocate for psychedelic use, but I don't, these days I'm not using them at all. I haven't used any psychedelics in probably well over a year. And it's because I have an untrained mind, and when I go into those states, I'm fighting it instead of surrendering. And so it seems that a logical way to sort of ease the pain of ego death is to work on it little by little, you know, a day at a time. And that when one doesn't have the relief from the story of me to sort of act as a counter to the loss of me during the process of ego death, it's nice to have something sort of to entice you outside of yourself. And what I mean by that is, we individually need to develop our own relationship with practice, with breathing, with sitting and meditating. And I find so often that I cling to ideas and sort of these abstractions of just, you know, the felt presence of immediate experience. And, I wrote a little thing. I wasn't sure if I was going to read it, but I'll read it. Kind of all over the place here. I wrote it on the front and back of this thing here, so let me try and read it in order. It's tentatively called The Philosopher and the Scientist. My insistence on seeing things through a philosophical lens is less a reflection of any wisdom, but rather a resistance to logic and the objective analysis of data. Because I cannot seem to step outside of myself, my experience will always be subjective. It's therefore ironic and paradoxical to use logic as a means for attaining knowledge and understanding when the observer is incapable of any objective analysis. Either way, the philosopher and the scientist will color their conclusions with their own biases, and if nothing else, have an effect on reality simply by virtue of observing. Cutting-edge quantum physics is finding that matter is merely a sea of potential electrons waiting to be observed, and accordingly, by the act of observation, one collapses the waveform into a tangible thing to be experienced as such. But in truth, Schrodinger's cat is both dead and alive when unobserved. And yet this propensity for, and even addiction to, the drawing of conclusions. While the quest for knowledge and understanding is pure, the drawing of conclusions leaves us with only half the picture at any given time and distorts the lens of objective witnessing. In conclusion, the analysis of one's experience is not experience itself, but really the story one tells themselves about their experience as it's happening, always one step removed from experience itself. And, you know, I can only speak, that's it. I can only speak for myself. You know, maybe you guys have like a firm practice. Maybe you already, you know, sit and meditate a half hour in the morning and a half hour at night, which is a lot more than I do. I mean, I'll go for a few days and I'll sit and meditate. And, you know, maybe for like a good 20 minutes or 30 minutes, even starting out at 5 minutes and trying to get that under my belt. But it's amazing how many things seem interesting all of a sudden when it comes time to meditate, like the things that I'd even rather not be doing in my free time, all of a sudden don't seem so bad. You know, like there's something sort of scary about not doing and just sort of being. Because what do I do with being? You know, it's like, it's sort of my own propensity toward waiting and looking ahead or living in memory in the past. And I'm not sure how I'm trying to tie this through to the whole philosopher-scientist thing other than, and with psychedelics. I suppose when one does start to cultivate a practice of meditation, you kind of get into maybe what you could call like a groove in a way. Like it becomes sort of less challenging. You know, practice makes perfect, you know, with anything. And it's funny, the relief that I've been looking for from life, from the story of me, from my ego and my ambitions, It exists within meditation and just, you know, enjoying doing nothing and just being. And when that sort of simple peace arises from sort of, you know, putting money in the meditation bank, I sort of call it, I mean, it definitely pays dividends. It does. You know, it makes me feel happier in my life on a daily basis. And, you know, well, one thing I suppose that this leads into is relationships and triggers and feeling triggered by people and situations. And that the sitting meditation practice, it helps to sort of create a buffer zone between me and my experience. It sort of provides just a bit of space from viewing things so close, you know, like from so closely identifying with things personally. Just it helps to witness without attachment. Because what happens for me is I start to develop this relationship with my thoughts where they're not as important and where I'm starting to see them sort of just as really abstractions and distractions from, you know, more of like an empty mind. It's so easy to be swept away by ideas that arise during meditation. And, you know, I'll sort of spin off these mental fantasies. And then I find myself like, whoa, you know, I just really got taken away from my breath. And here I am, you know, just sort of storytelling in my head. But that's fine. You know, like that's what I call the redemption of the moment. It's like, okay, I just realized it. And now I'm going back to my breath. And there's no shame in that, no guilt. I suppose the shame and the guilt is Well, it's for me, it's got to go. You know, I do like the idea that we are pure underneath all of our conditioning. And it's not even that our conditioning is impure, but it's more of like a caricature of who we are rather than who we are. And that's only for you to decide, you know, who do you want to be? And that's what's scary about ego death and sort of stripping away these layers is you get down to it and you're like, well, then who am I? And, well, I mean, you're whoever you want to be, really. And whoever you choose to be. And I suppose, you know, I've been at an impasse with the podcast for a while, just sort of trying to humble myself and go through things and almost feeling embarrassed, like, to share, because well, and not to criticize myself, but, like, you know, really, ideas are ultimately one step removed from direct experience. And it's like, I almost want to get dumb. And that's why I like drinking alcohol, is it sort of puts me in my body and takes me out of the analysis of my experience. You know, that's so much analysis going on in my head and calculating and the breathing seems to be the liberator from that. And, you know, I've been working on this. I don't even think I do it right, but it's sort of like a pranayama thing, you know. It's like a sort of hamsa, you know, like you do it with your mouth closed and the tip of your tongue behind your top teeth. So, like, you know, you start with an out breath and breathing in through your nose. Let's see, hold on, let me breathe out first. Basically, that's it. I mean, that was long. That was an out breath at the end there, that long thing. I'm not sure I'm even doing it right, but it's like a ham sa with your mouth closed, and it's kind of like a Kriya yoga technique. The out breath, your tongue is flat on the bottom of your mouth, touching the bottom teeth, you know, the back of the bottom teeth. I'm sure you can look up a better you know, example on YouTube. But my experience when I breathe like that is a freedom from the weight of me. And I almost feel suspended between my body and eternity. And thoughts come up less aggressively. there, it's almost like even the experience of the room I'm sitting in, it becomes more of a witnessing experience of that, but that is not even, I don't know. But, you know, it's, look up like a pranayama and kriya yoga if you're looking to sort of do that sort of technique. Also, there's the, is it Sunrise Living Community? This was one of Yogananda's students. I'll put a link in the show notes. His name's Norman Paulson, I think. He's since passed, but I believe his wife carries on his work up in like north of Santa Barbara. Anyway, they send out breathing technique stuff that you can basically apply to their email newsletter, and they'll send you stuff. I'm not sure how much longer I want to go. I didn't really tie together all of the sort of various ideas that I was trying to make, but as well as I wanted to. Well, basically, psychedelics are scary for me at this point. I have a severely healthy respect for them, and a frail ego at times. I do want to talk on this before I go. I think a lot of people are throwing out the baby with the bathwater when it comes to the ego. Ego should not be in charge. Ego is a lousy master, but a good servant. When I drive a car, which I don't really do these days, but when I ride my bike, it's good to know where my edges are and where the edges of the other begins. You're in a body, and that's part of that is having an ego. I think what people are trying to say, and we're all kind of missing the mark here, is what we're trying to do away with is the desire for the self alone. You know, because that while there's something really, romantic and enchanting about, you know, kind of being an ascetic, living in the mountains, living off of sunlight and air, you know, you are a person and, you know, you are human and you have needs and wants. And really, there's a lot of judging going on of how and who we ought to be, I think. And I think the mistake that we've made, and now we're sort of like the pendulum drastically swinging to the other end, is that we've made the pursuit of comfort the sort of the ends. Sort of the end-all be-all. And yeah, that's fine when we were, beginning to evolve. Really, survival was pretty damn important, and it still is. But, we have sort of like these higher aspirations now. And how we're going to begin to realize them, I think, is something worth looking at. I'd be open to suggestions. Please send me some feedback here. Because, I've connected with a lot of you on Facebook. But still I'm finding it hard to like sort of leave my cave and go out and make it happen in the physical sense. But I do value this space as a means for fostering a dialogue. I just feel like it's really one-sided at times because I just kind of talk at you guys. And I've said this before. And maybe that's just shit I need to get over. You know? And the people who enjoy it will listen, and the people who don't won't. But, I've been working on Critter Jones with my brother Corey and my dad Mike and my brother-in-law Mickey. And, we have CritterJones.com up and a new EP for sale. And, I feel really good about that. I'm also like skeptical of everything that I do. Like I almost see most accomplishments as I wouldn't call it a trap, but like, you know, like you achieve something and then that sort of becomes like its own thing to then, you know, repeat and fulfill again and sort of like, I mean, I'd be happy just to do the podcast and put the music out for free in the podcast, but you know, my dad's invested a little money, to say the least, in beefing up the studio and, you know, trying to press all the CDs. And it would be nice to make some money back, if for no other reason than for let's do it for dad, guys. Come on, let's do it for dad. And so, you know, yeah, check out CritterJones.com or Facebook/CritterJones. You can find me on there. Yeah, I don't know. I've got a lot I'd like to say, but this is kind of dragging on now, is it not? I don't know. Got to find my flow again. I just want to say I love all of you really deeply, and I'm not afraid to say that, and that everything's gonna be okay. What's that saying? In the end, everything will be okay. If things aren't okay, it's not the end yet, or something to that extent. But, I did want to say one more thing on the breath thing. I've noticed personally when I do that sort of long breathing, that controlled sort of diaphragm breathing, and it's like you're injecting air into your throat and out of your throat. It's hard to explain, but you might figure out what I mean, or you might already know. Is that, you know, I do think of the cosmos as like cycles of breath, you know, like expansion, contraction. And I've noticed with myself that towards the end of an out-breath, there's sort of this extra thrust at the end to expel that last little bit of air. And I've said this before, like, when does the out-breath become the in-breath? I mean, that's a mystery. Fuck all the other philosophy. If we only focused on that mystery, I think that therein lies, you know, treasures to be found. And how that relates to our physical experience is, you know, like they say that the expansion of the universe is speeding up, that and that potentially, eventually, gravity could overtake, you know, sort of the force of expansion, and that things would eventually start to collapse. I feel like we're presently experiencing that thrust at the end of the out-breath. And what I mean by that is, I don't know, it's sort of that, like, that last thrust before everything begins to collapse in on itself. And that moment between the expansion and the collapse is you know, there, in my opinion, you know, perhaps there's a singularity to be held, to be beheld in that moment, that eternity. But, you know, for that matter, that eternity always exists, and somehow mysteriously that singularity at the full outbreath seems to be the one and the same as the singularity at the full in-breath. And, you know, whereas I've somehow thought of it as sort of like an oval shape creation, or like, you know, a cocoon stretching from one point to another, I'm beginning to see it more as like a figure eight, like a loop that's been, you know, had the middle sort of twisted and pinched, so that paradoxically, the end is the beginning. The beginning is the end. There is no such thing as death. We are the imagination of ourselves. Well, I love Bill Hicks, and I love you guys, and I hope these podcasts help affirm a knowing that you already possess, and that I often forget in the absence of, you know, doing these podcasts. So thank you for tuning in. And I want to recommend a couple things real quick. I want to recommend the work of Michael McIntosh and Dr. Nick Good and Superhero Training, all the freebies they've extended my way from, you know, Isotone, relaxation, meditation audio to video blogs on juicing and triggers. You know, Michael's got some great stuff about dealing with ego death and triggers and, you know, because it's funny, I'm living with my dad and my brother, and they, it's funny, they're both on vacation right now. My brother Corey's in Boston, and my dad Mike is in San Diego with my sister Molly. And so my sister Kelly and I think my mom, we're going to go see some fireworks with Emmett and Jade, my kids. And so I wish you guys a happy 4th. You know, be safe. You know, I realize some of you don't probably approve of the herb smoking on the show. That's too bad. You can deal with it. You know? And I'm trying to learn how to love that part of myself and forgive myself and not judge myself. And hey, it's not crack. In fact, I'm trying to turn my brother on to the Rick Simpson oil. As you know, my brother actually has multiple sclerosis. And so, you know, healing ourselves, I think that's sort of like the crux of this episode, and the need for practice and the need for breathing and stilling the mind, and that you owe it to yourself to cultivate a personal practice and forgive the preachiness in the event that you're the shit and you already have an insane practice. So Lord knows I've got my work cut out for me, and I can't speak for you. But yeah, so I'm going to go check out fireworks with my kids. And, you know, I really want to thank, I mean, talk about healing and, you know, the miraculous nature of the universe, folks. You know, I was going through a painful period of, you know, of divorce with Lindsay. And, I've experienced a lot of healing. And I just want to give a big shout out to both she and her boyfriend, Babe Baker, who's an awesome dude. And he developed a brand new website for us. And, yeah, thank you, Babe. It's awesome. And, you know, Babe's a videographer, and you'll see me promoting his stuff on our Twitter page and, you know, the website and Facebook. And, also Lindsay's doing a blog called, Small Time Cook. And I really want to give a huge, huge shout out to Elaine Smith. I've known Elaine for over 10 years. She used to date my brother, Corey, back in the old school Critter Jones days. They were living in Los Feliz, which is, it's an awesome part of LA. It's right by Griffith Park. And she and Corey were living there, and I think like Kid A had just come out from Radiohead, and gosh, it was, I was working at the Bodie Tree bookstore. Long story short, Elaine Smith is one of the most amazing people on the planet, and she is currently going through, I don't want to use the word battle because she's so zen, she's going through her cancer healing process, and I'd love it if you guys would take a few minutes and check out her blog. Let me pull up the link. I think it's I Heart My Shark Fin. Let me check real quick. Yeah, it's I Heart My Shark Fin .blogspot.com. You'll find links to it on CritterJones.com as well. You know, we're trying to pull together and contribute a little money to Elaine because she's uninsured and she's, you know, going through this whole thing. You know, she's got friends there for us, but, you know, it's something she's going through on her own. That's a struggle, and it would be really nice if we could step up and help her. And, you know, so fuck donations to the podcast. Fuck buying the CD. You know, let's be there for her. I'd rather, you know, give away the music. But, You know, that's the funny thing is I'm having to strip myself of these limited beliefs, you know, these unexamined beliefs about limited abundance, limited finance. Money is it's an idea. There's no finite amount of money out there. It's infinite. And really it's just the tool and symbol of abundance in our culture. And so I look forward to you guys checking out Elaine Smith's blog and, you know, check out what Babe Baker's doing and Lindsay Ann over at Small Time Cook. And, yeah, Brand of Horses. I'll put all this stuff in the show notes. I'm trying to expand the focus beyond my own philosophical musings to include more of a community thing. And I apologize in the past for those of you who've sort of reached out and maybe received a half-assed response, or people who've donated and I've been like, yeah, let me give you a shout-out on the podcast, and then like totally accidentally deleted an email and forgotten who it was and being disorganized. And I'm going to have to pay to get this podcast back to its pro status so that I can have more bandwidth, but I might just do it through the website and have an RSS through the website for Critter Jones and just have it on my blog page there. So yeah, go check out CritterJones.com. All right, folks, I love you. Peace and blessings, love and light, all that good stuff. You can reach me at MysticMindPodcast@gmail.com, Facebook.com/JesseMillerBand. Also, mysticmind.podomatic.com, critterjones.com, and all that good stuff. Until next time, see, I'm going to leave you with a song here. I'm going to plug one of my brother's tunes. I love my brother, Corey. He wrote this song, and it's one of our productions, Charlie, by Critter Jones. All right, peace out.
After that, my hands on my heart. Computers and such, so many times better now, but so out of touch. I mean to break the red tape.
after that, my hands on my heart.